ever will be. And you know it.
With a tear in my eye.
The queen of the crop.
Acknowledge me.
Good morning, everybody. Episode 386 of Top Rope Nation. I guess good afternoon, good evening, depending on where you're at in the world, as we get ready to settle in and talk a little WWE Money in the Bank from Saturday evening out in Inglewood, California at the Intuit Dome. We got a lot to talk about this morning. Justin Joint, how are you doing this Sunday morning?
Not too bad, sir. I am on my third cup of coffee, and I'm just kind of waiting for that all to kick in.
How am I second one here? I'm trailing you a little bit. Jesse, how are you doing?
Inglewood's always up to no good.
Even life, Hollywood?
Yeah, exactly. You know LA up in this. Everything's going pretty well right now, so I've had more than enough coffee, so I don't need any more.
Nice. Well, it was definitely a noteworthy show. I don't know if I would call it a great show by any means. Guys, if you're joining us in the chat right now, as always, give us your grade for Money in the Bank, A through F. We're going to start off right there, right away. Justin, give us your grade from last night's show.
I think everybody who listens to this regularly knows that I'm not a huge fan of this product. I think it was, for me personally, a pretty boring show for the most part that was saved by the ladies, specifically Becky and Lyra. I also enjoyed Octagon Jr.'s showing. And I hate to say it, but Logan Paul's moonsault through the table might have been the highlight of the night for me. I'm around that C plus range. It was one of those shows where I think for the most part, all the obvious people won, but in this case, that was a good thing. They were the people that should win those matches.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. Jesse, where are you at?
You mean the botched Buckshot Lariat wasn't your highlight of the night, Justin?
No. Actually, that might have been because of my feelings towards Logan Paul. I did enjoy that.
Well, Jesse, the avatars on social media tell me he's better than Hangman Page. How could this possibly happen?
And Will Ospreay.
Oh, yes, that too.
Patrons, get ready for that one tomorrow. It's going to be a spicy one. I also am going C+ as well. I feel if the men's Money in the Bank wasn't so effing overbooked, I probably would have given the show a B-, maybe even a B. Yeah, Lyra and Becky killed it. I thoroughly enjoyed that match. And the main event was interesting. And yeah, the inclusion of Octagon Jr. was welcome. Got a chance to see, I did watch Chad Gable, El Hijo del Vikingo for about 2/3 of it. And still got to go back and watch that. So yeah, it was really cool to see the AAA stars on display on YouTube as well. So yeah, C+ for this one.
Yeah, I have not seen any of Worlds Collide yet. I heard it was a good show. I did enjoy the tweets where people were, or the skeets, where people were saying, you know, it was a great show, so this proves that WWE is not going to be authentic with AAA. Because AAA shows had not been good in recent months. CMLL is definitely the better of the two promotions in recent years. But yeah, apparently it was really a show. I have to go back and watch it.
Well, I don't know if you heard Rey Mysterio, but finally the WWE has authenticated Lucha Libre.
Rey, come on, man.
So bad.
John Hope in the chat, checking in, patron from across the pond. He says, the three-man power trip is back live. Yes, we are. C+.
Ooh, C+. Carl in the chat's giving me strength to drop my letter grade.
C-, Carl says, also patron of the show. Pacing of both Money in the Bank didn't work for me. Liked Becky, Lyra, and felt Logan and Cody worked hard to get something out of Jay and Hollywood, Hulk, Cena. Worlds Collide was much, much better. Yeah, I'm at a C+ or C. I think it was about an average show. I agree with what you said, Justin. Pretty much across the board, all the right people won. You know, I did the preview show on BR, and then I put that out as a TRN extra for our patrons, a podcast on Friday. Jesse did a preview also earlier in the week. I know every pick of mine was what happened. You know, pick Naomi to win, pick Seth to win. I was a little concerned that they might not go with one of them, especially Seth, because it seems so obvious So I'm glad that they stuck to it because it was definitely the call they should have made. Thought we'll talk about the Becky Lyra match and pretty much everything else, I think, set up something down the road. So it all made sense in that regard. So yeah, I'd say I'll go C plus on it. I didn't think the women's Money in the Bank last year was awesome. This year's I didn't think was as good. I thought both Money in the Bank matches were not really great. They were decent. The men's was super overbooked. Did not finish that one at all. Women's was okay. Had some cool spots, but I thought 2024 was a little better.
I really, really liked the mix of ladies in this year's edition. I feel like that brought something new to it, and there was a lot more curiosity, even though I assumed Naomi was going to be the winner, because I mean, you want the heel to be carrying the briefcase. That makes the most sense. But yeah, really enjoyed the different things that everybody brought to that match. But I agree in general, you know, the Money in the Bank match, they were both a little overcooked. They're both way too long for this kind of match with wrestlers just disappearing completely for 10-minute stretches of these matches. Yeah. But luckily, you know, like I said, I think the two, weirdly, the two Intercontinental title matches saved the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, more the men, I think, than anything when it came to overstaying their welcome. But of course, that had to do with the factions getting involved. So yeah, the women's match, will obviously get into it. But yeah, the influx of the new talent has been very helpful. You see a Roxanne Perez, a Julia, and a Stephanie Vaquer. They all can work. So added a little bit of a nice element to this one.
And shockingly, Rhea Ripley's first ladder match ever. I was stunned considering we seem to get a ladder match in pro wrestling every other week.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, here's where our people on Twitter X were at on this show. We still don't have poll functionality, to my knowledge, over on Blue Sky. So I still have to post these on the old Twitter page, which is pretty much dormant, except for the posts that I put up to promote the show and my polls. And that's about it. On Twitter, they were at 52% giving it a B, 21% a C, about 6% a D or F, and 21% an A. Yeah, this ain't an A show. I'm sorry. No way. But, you know, I could see why some people might give it a B. I think in the moment last night on our post show on BR, I was like, maybe a B minus, C plus, B minus. I dropped it a little bit this morning. But so I could definitely see the Bs for some people on this one. So I think we should probably just start off with the main event because, you know, that's where what everyone is talking about this morning with the return of R-Truth at the end and you know, everything that happened with him during the week and all the talk about what was his contractual status, you know, what is it moving forward and all of that. We can get to that in the finish and, you know, how he was involved in that. But overall, you know, you had Logan Paul and John Cena taking on Jey Uso and Cody Rhodes. And I will say, I mean, the bar is very low on this. I do think it was Cena's best match since he's been back. Mm-hmm. Unquestionably. Wow. Okay. Unquestionably, I think. Just how he looked in the ring, looked a little bit more acclimated, he was still slow, but better than he's looked, I think, in the last few matches we've seen. You know, a little weird. I think if you could have put John with Gunther, I would have been more interested in the match. And wouldn't that have made a little bit more sense given the match they're going to on Monday? But you get Logan Paul in there, I guess, trying to get some heat for John, since everybody, you know, still wants to cheer him. And he still got cheered. So, you know, they booed Logan. People still wanted to cheer John. And there was rumors out there of, could John turn on Logan in this match, you know, and go babyface and finally go to what the fans really want to see, which is a John Cena babyface run. Because the heel turn just not working like they want. But at the same time, it's too soon to do that because you got to get back to Cena and Cody. And so going into the match, my thought was, it's probably going to set up Cena and Cody as a rematch. And, you know, I thought the baby faces would go over. I thought, you know, maybe there was a chance Logan would take the fall. But I think the best option would be Cena taking the fall, Cody pinning him, getting his win back, setting up a rematch at SummerSlam. And Justin, that's exactly the route they went down.
Yeah, I think that's the right call if the destination is Cena and Cody. Totally agree with you that this would be way too soon to try and turn Cena back. I mean, that would have just been a giant spotlight on WWE throwing the white flag as far as this Cena heel run, which I still just absolutely hate. I hate everything about it. The presentation, his entrance is so stupid with him wearing the belt backwards and the towel behind his head. You know, it's like everything's all blacked out with just John Cena in the background, yet he's all in his Fruity Pebbles gear. it's so dumb. You sounds like you guys are a lot higher on this match than I am. I was pretty bored throughout. I hated that hot tag moment to get Cody in there with Paul and John arguing with each other. And then just the kind of almost comedic acting, quote unquote, that they did once they realized that Jay was about to get the tag. And I guess that says a lot about John Cena's, you know, run so far, that this is probably his best match, which I didn't even like. I mean, the good thing is they're setting up a lot for the future, which you can't really get all that mad about.
Yeah. I wouldn't even say I was high on the match, just by the way. it's a low bar, but probably Cena's best in-ring match. I did think the match dragged a lot, you know, with Jay taking all the punishment until he could get the hot tag to Cody, and it was very slow.
It was in an awkward spot. Like, considering what the ending was, it had to main event, but, you know, it was following two matches, you know, two ladder matches on the show. So it's like you're going to have this kind of dragging long WWE main event style tag team match. I mean, it's going to be probably a bit boring until you get to the surprise at the end.
Yeah. Go ahead, Jesse.
I looked at the clock and I said, this thing's going to end right at 9:15. Bell rang right at 9:15. It was over. Knew it. Commentary, specifically Michael Cole and Pat McAfee, were insufferable last night.
Yeah.
Wade was fine, I felt, but the other two were horrid. So when the announcer said about John Cena, the never seen 17, I said, is that how many losses on TV he had in a row before he finally won in the Elimination Chamber? I said, and at one point, Michael Cole said, it was Wade Barrett actually. He said, this might be the best version of John Cena we've ever seen. Holy hell, that is bad. Wow. In which I wrote that John Cena is moving like 1996 Hollywood Hulk Hogan, when in the past he's been moving like 98, 99 Hulk Hogan. So, like you said, a step up. With Cena and Logan Paul not getting along, and the pushing and the shoving was interesting. You're right, that hot tag just wasn't it for me. And Logan had his moments. I actually did like that drone shot where Cody hit the suplex.
That was sweet. That was really cool. Yeah.
I thought that was awesome. I felt Logan, for the most part, actually was very good in this match, as much as I don't like it, including the missed buckshot lariat, which I got a chuckle out of too. But yeah, I think, Ryan, you're going to allude to it. Ron Killings at the end here was a big surprise.
Yeah. Yeah, the drone shot. So if you guys didn't see the match, Logan gets up on the turnbuckle, and they have this drone, you know, circling the ring, which had some cool shots in the Money in the Bank match earlier too. And, you know, he's waiting and he's waiting. He's got his hand out, like the drone lands in his hand. And then right when that happens, Cody jumps to the top rope, superplexes him. So you see the camera like flip in the air, and then Jay comes off with the splash, and then he like drops the camera and it falls to the mat. That was really cool. I really liked that. That was very clever. In the end, what happened was, you know, there was that moonsault, that springboard moonsault on the outside that Justin mentioned that Logan Paul hit, you know, to take out him and Jay. And that left Cody and John in the ring. And, you know, John gets the belt shot, his new finisher. He gets the belt. He takes out Cody with it. And then someone comes out all dressed in black and attacks Cena, takes him out, pulls off his hood, and it is none other than Ron Killings, R-Truth. And the crowd went totally nuts for this guy. Cody ends up getting up, hitting Crossroads, gets the pinfall for the victory. But yeah, more or less, the story was Ron Killings and what has happened to him throughout the week. And so, you know, there was chants throughout the night of, we want truth. even during Becky Lyra, which was an awesome match, in the middle of that match, she just started chanting, "We want truth." And, you know, the reporting this week was that not that he was fired, not that he was released. Everyone keeps getting this wrong, but that his contract was expiring. We didn't have an exact date on when it was expiring, and it was not going to be renewed. And that was it, you know, so that story is out there. Everybody is understandably angry about it because Truth has been in this. I was trying to remember. I was going to look this up. How long has he been around? Obviously, he had the stint with TNA, where he was NWA champion at the beginning of TNA. But he was in WWE before that as K-Quick.
Mm-hmm.
He came in 99.
Yeah, I think he came back. I want to say it was around 2007, 2008.
That's exactly what I was going to say, Justin.
Mm-hmm. Yep, 2008. So, yeah, he was in WWF 99 to 01, left, was in TNA, did some indies, came back in 2008, and, you know, he's been there ever since. So, when you go back to when he started in the company, he's one of the longest tenured guys there. He's super beloved backstage. Everybody likes him. Mm-hmm. Obviously, hasn't been a pushed act, really, in many, many years, except for when, you know, they would put him with Miz. Mostly comedic stuff, but kind of just a legacy act. Everyone kind of figured he would be around forever. And, you know, I think even with the story about him not being renewed, eventually would sign him to a Legends deal for sure. It's just a mm-hmm. different type of contract, not a performer contract, but a Legends contract. Well, it appears he's been re-signed. And, you know, there's a lot of people out there, and we'll get to why people are thinking this of, oh, the media got worked and this was all part of the show. It was not part of the show. This was just use your brains, people. If this was part of the show, what about all those other people that lost their jobs? Was that just to sell it for R-Truth?
That was just WWE going full method acting, Daniel Day-Lewis style, man.
Cinema. Yeah.
Cinema. You know, yeah, I mean, just the way that they've gone about, you know, booking him the last couple of weeks. You know, he lost to JC Mateo, Jeff Cobb, in 2 minutes on SmackDown last week. You know, that's a way to like send him on his way, not mm-hmm. to bring him back and have him involved in the finish of the main event of the next PLE. So Hunter was asked about this in the post-show media scrum. And all he said was, "Did you enjoy the show? It's all part of the show." And it's just a way to like undermine the media. So everyone's going to question now, is everything a work when people get released? Is that a work? Is that part of the show? He could have just went up there and been honest and said, "Look, we listened to the fans. It was a mistake. We brought him back." What's the harm in saying that? Instead, you want to undermine the media because you don't like the media. In the case of Paul Levesque, I think is the underlying reason here. He's never been a big fan of the wrestling media. And so he undermines all the reporting. But guys, I assure you, the reporting is correct here. R-Truth was told he was not being renewed, and the fans getting behind them caused them to shift their position and to bring him back. This is not the first time this has happened in WWE history. Matt Hardy, you guys remember Matt Hardy? Mm-hmm. He got fired. Everyone got pissed. They brought him back, and then they, for some reason, squashed him in that match at SummerSlam. But, you know, this has happened before. Public pressure worked in this circumstance. The whole thing was not a work. None of it makes sense. We had Ron Killing's son on Instagram. He posted the video of Triple H, you know, saying all part of the show, and basically said, "No cap, you know, stop the cap," or something like that. I can't remember how he worded it. "Stop being fake," is essentially what he was saying. He was confirming it was all legit. So you guys want to jump in here? Any thoughts on this?
Only thing I have is this is definitely not the same as Phil Brooks signing on the dotted line the day of Money in the Bank 2011 and staying with the company and winning the WWE Championship. Nope, those two things are completely different. That is like an apple and a zucchini, not apples and oranges.
Yeah.
Obviously, R-Truth is beloved by everybody he works with in a large portion of the fan base. I was actually, you know, I thought the send-off was pretty good. You know, you give him a big match against a world champion of which he loses, that he had a history with. And I was kind of curious to see what maybe he would do on the indies for a little bit before. I agree with Ryan that he would eventually sign a Legends deal. I kind of wanted to see all of that. But the funny thing to me is, with just the fan base, not talking about people within the company who were in an uproar about this, it's like, if WWE had just been silent about it and R-Truth had just like disappeared for 10 months, nobody would have blinked an eye that he wasn't on TV for a while. But, you know, because of the whole the release, quote unquote, portion of it, everybody was all up in arms. It makes you think that R-Truth is a much bigger deal than he actually is, which, you know, God love him. You know, he's a mid-card comedy talent, which, you know, is not a bad thing. But boy, you would think they had almost lost a CM Punk or a Bryan Danielson or something. So I don't know. Like, I didn't need any more of John Cena versus Ron Killings in my life. I had plenty of that in 2025. So the moment was cool. You know, the crowd loved it. But it just, you know, once the excitement of the reveal faded, it was just kind of like, oh, yeah, I guess we got to have more Cena and R-Truth, which, you know, we have limited Cena dates left. And even though they've been underwhelming so far, this is how we're going to use them. That sucks. You know, no offense to R-Truth, but that sucks.
You have 5 new messages. Hey, Carl, it's Jen from Finance. Could you submit your expenses this week? Hey, Carl, happy Friday. It's Jen, Finance. Just need those receipts today. Me again, Carl. Really need those receipts, like last week. Please just tell me where they are. Are you by your desk right now?
Finance teams, you shouldn't be chasing down Carl or anyone else. With Ramp, expenses are sent with a text and reminders happen automatically. Switch your business to ramp.com today and love finance again.
Here is the post I was talking about that Christopher Killings had, Ron's son. So he put on his Instagram story, you know, Hunter's comment, and stop the cap. Stop the fakeness. You know, it was legit. Also, to your point, Justin, about wanting to see what he would do on the indies, he was reaching out to indies already. You know, people were feeling out, you know, what it would cost to bring him in and all those things. So, like, if that was a work, that's just horrible business practice, right?
Yeah.
I mean, come on, guys. Use your heads. Yeah, certainly Paul Levesque would never lie to you, right? I mean, you're finding out on social media these days who are the real marks and who will buy absolutely anything, you know?
You know, I think one of the other reasons why I was a little underwhelmed by the whole thing is because when the masked person jumped in there, I had a true moment of excitement of like, oh, who is this? Is this somebody new, somebody unexpected? Where is this going? Did you guys, you know, it's really neither here nor there. The mystery didn't last very long, but what did anybody pop into your mind when you saw the masked figure jump in there?
It took me about a second and a half because I saw his jeans kind of roll up and I saw the skin and I go, that's R-Truth.
Yeah.
And it did pop me initially. And then, like you said, it kind of wore off. Real quick, might go on a little tangent. I'll try to be as fast as I can. I think from a social media perspective, when they see certain things and they hear certain things coming from Triple H, they don't really realize that the three of us specifically, when we get poked fun of on TikTok and Instagram and stuff like that, they don't realize that we've been watching World Wrestling Entertainment for pretty dang close to 40 years. We've seen everything. We know their habits. We know their styles. So we're trying to inform you that this is how it is. This is how it has always been. So as opposed to, oh, maybe they are changing. We've lived through that. We've had hopes for changes in specific ways. In 2011, when Punk won the title, they changed for about a year or two, then went right back to their old thing. Whatever was best for business. And then Triple H's speech in 2019, just saying, Mark out there in social media land, we're changing because of you. Nope. Incorrect. So again, when we criticize, it comes from a good spot in terms of our insides. But we know that because they're making money hand over fist, nothing's going to happen.
Yeah.
Why change?
No, you're well said. Exactly right. I mean, Hunter wants to control the whole narrative. He wants you to think it was part of the show because it was a bad look for the company. You know, it's really, It's not any more complex than that, but it wasn't part of the show. It was legit. Again, like I said, just think about it. Think about all these things that happened. Why it would make no sense for that to have been a work. Let's see, Carl in the chat. Whether it is Triple H saying little and talking BS or TK saying too much and nothing at the same time, these post-show media scrums need different voices or just to not exist. You know, here's the thing with these. A lot of the people that are being invited to them or getting their press passes approved these days are people that they see of as friendly media. And, you know, I can tell you, I know some people who used to be very involved in putting these media sessions on when they first started there, They were working for WWE at the time. And they have always seen these as part of the show. They don't want you to go beyond the script. They don't want you to ask hard-hitting questions. That's not what they want. They want to control the environment. They see the post-show as part of the storyline. You know, like they see this as part of the show that they are putting on. And so if you're going to ask those hard-hitting questions, they don't want that. They're not going to answer. You're not going to be invited back. And so to Carl's point, if that's the case, why even do them? You know, they're getting very boring. Hunter barely took any questions last night. I think it was like three or four questions. The truth one was, you know, the good question, and he pivoted right away. I mean, we're not seeing as much media availability with WWE and the talent they bring out anymore. It is kind of pointless because they see it all as just storyline and way to advance storylines. And they want you to just, as a media member, they want you to feel fortunate that you're there. They want you to feel like you're just part of the show. And if that's not the angle you're taking, you're not going to get invited. It's supposed to be a controlled environment.
Yeah. So. And then with all the people, as Tim alluded to in the chat, paying $500 plus to see this live, as opposed to, yeah, wrestling media, where they're very fortunate enough where they, I don't know what they're doing these days, if they're getting it discounted or if they are getting a free media pass. You would know that, Ryan.
Yeah. Yeah. So anyways, that was the main event. I don't really have too much more. Yeah, we're probably going to get a Cena R-Truth match again, to Justin's point. Oh. maybe be on the way to Cena and Cody at SummerSlam. There could be some stops in between. Like I think Carl mentioned possibly King of the Ring could play a role in that. We shall see. I mean, we got almost 2 months till SummerSlam, so they're going to have plenty of time to kill. That's in early August. They got that Saudi show before that. So Saturday night's main event.
In a perfect world, Cena would be working with completely different talent instead of giving you all of the hits from beginning to end. Cody is really the only different talent that he's worked with, but even then, he worked with him a decade ago when Cody was lesser known.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I want to see something fresh.
Yes.
You know? Or, you know, if they're going to run back something, I want to see him wrestle Punk again. I think that would be cool. But, you know, I think they'll get there eventually. They got to put Cena and Punk in there together, you would think. All right, so let's go through the rest of the card. I don't think it'll take a whole lot of time. We can start right off at the beginning. So the women opened the show. And like Justin said a little bit ago, you know, we had a really, really strong roster, way, way stronger than the men's match. There was several people here you could maybe make the argument for of winning. I don't want to go through all that because I talked about it on my preview. Jesse talked about it on his preview. But, you know, in the end, I thought it kind of came down to three people. I thought it'd be Roxanne Perez or it'd be Naomi, you know, maybe, well, I don't even think Rhea made much sense at all. Stephanie Vaquer. I like she could pop just because you can tell she's someone that they're going to push. I thought Stephanie, Roxanne or Naomi. I thought it would be one of those three.
And, you know, I think arguments could be made for Julie and Vaquer just because of how new they are and maybe to really shake things up. Really, the only one I didn't think had any chance was Alexa Bliss. In Rhea, I really only thought just because I think by far and away, she got the loudest reaction of the night, at the very least for everybody involved in this match.
Yeah.
Uninformed me dismissed Naomi on Monday.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I did. Yeah, I just kind of, I don't know if it's because I've been a little bit lack on the SmackDown product or not. I know that her character has been pretty solid since she's turned heel. However, I guess, yeah, looking at it, it makes a lot more sense for a heel to carry a Money in the Bank briefcase than a babyface. And you should reward Naomi for her work. She has been doing a solid job. I have been paying attention to her Mm-hmm. Her more of her promos, I would say, than her in-ring work. Because I think I look at it as a Roxanne Perez, a Julia, Stephanie Vaquer. You could even, I mean, I wouldn't use Chelsea Green. You could say Chelsea Green, but just like newer faces. This is kind of used as a platform to elevate a newer talent as opposed to going back to somebody who's been with the company on and off for almost 15 years. That's kind of why I dismiss Naomi.
Well, to your point too, I would say that among fans, there seemed to be like a lot of movement towards Naomi in the last couple of days before the show. More people were talking about it. It seemed like on social media, kind of people were trying to will it into an existence that Naomi should win. You know, and as the week went on and as I started thinking about it more, it's like, yeah, that would make sense because she can get the briefcase. She can be Tiffany. She's got the built-in storyline with Bianca and Jade. You can make that about the title then. Get Bianca back in the title picture. Jade, if you want to. Just makes a lot of sense. And then I thought with Roxanne, you know, she's got the stuff going on with Judgment Day. I thought those two had the strongest storyline reasons to win because the briefcase could become a focal point of existing storylines. Stephanie Vaquer, I thought she seems just like she's going to get pushed hard quickly. I think Julia is the one who's kind of falling to the wayside right now. She's a new face. She's super talented, but it seems like it's all behind Stephanie right now. And I agree, you know, Alexa, just, it didn't make any sense. Rhea, not the type of character to have the briefcase at all.
That's true.
But yeah, Naomi ends up winning. The match itself, like I said, was good. Some cool spots, not as great as last year's. I just wrote an article. I'm going to drive you all to this. I'm going to shamelessly plug this for Bleacher
Do
Report.
It.
Go to bleacherreport.com/WWE. I wrote a column on the 10 most dangerous spots in Money in the Bank history. And I actually had two from last year's women's match in there in my top three or four, I believe. You know, I had that crazy spot that Chelsea Green took last year at the finish with the ladders over the top rope through the tables. That was my like number two most dangerous spot ever. I thought that was insane last year. And I also had the sit out tombstone that Io Sky gave Zoe Stark last year onto the ladder. I think that was number four on my list. I didn't think there was any spot in this match that I would make my top 10 versus two last year. I still thought it was a pretty entertaining match, though. It took a long time to get underway. It was 20 minutes from the start of the show almost until the bell rang, all the entrances and all the hoopla with, you know, Star Spangled Banner we had to have out there and all of that. But yeah, when it got underway, I mean, there was, you guys have any spots you want to throw out? There's a point where they like buried Rhea under the ladders. There were some moonsaults onto the ladders. Anything stands out to you?
I don't know if this is something new and maybe I've just forgotten about it from previous Money in the Banks. I don't know if it's a new ladder design, but both in the women's and the men's, it seems when they do a high spot onto a ladder now that the ladders are like cracking and breaking, which I really enjoyed. It just makes it look way more impactful. And it just seems like in prior years, they've just kind of, they would bounce on the ladder a little bit more than actually crash through them.
Yeah.
Rhea Ripley taking a solid face buster onto a ladder, selling it very well. Just back to Stephanie Vaquer, she worked three times in 24 hours. She worked at AAA Worlds Collide too. So I know. Back in 2024's Women's Money in the Bank, that was a car crash and a half. I remember two or three accidental dangerous spots that happened. I think Chelsea Green suplexed herself on the ladder. Zoe Stark hit her head doing a move on the ladder. So arguably, you could have thrown that entire 2024 Money in the Bank women's ladder match into your top 10, and I wouldn't have blinked an eye.
Yeah, for sure. The finish was Ripley and Alexa Bliss were going for the briefcase, and we had Naomi kind of take them both out at the same time, and then she climbed up the ladder, got the briefcase to win the match. Crowd pop for it, despite her being a heel. I mean, this is what the fans wanted to see. Yeah, I mean, it was a good match. I think the right winner, and we'll see, you know, how they use that. I think Naomi's going to have the briefcase longer than Seth. I'll say that.
Hope so.
Yeah. Let's see what's Carl have in the chat here. He says, it's probable in my mind that we don't get past Evolution 2 with both cases cashed in. We'll come back to Seth, but I can see Naomi using three title matches at Evolution as her opportunity. Yeah.
And he corrects himself. I think he means they won't get past Evolution 2 with them not being cashed in.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. I mean, that would be a likely spot for that to happen. Let's see. Did we have the Dominic match next?
Yes.
That was the one that they had added during the afternoon. Yeah, so Dominic Mysterio against Octagon Jr., IC title match. This one I have to go back and watch. I'm going to leave this mostly to you guys because I started watching this show. I was at my parents' house because my sister and her kids were in town. And so I was watching the show over there, saw the whole women's match. And we got in the car to come home and I was kind of watching on my phone and then we were entering the house. So I didn't see this one very closely. Jesse, any thoughts on the IC title match?
Michael Cole saying classic Octagon Jr. I said, I don't think you know what classic Octagon Jr. looks like. I have only watched him one other time before, so I'm a little unfamiliar with his work. I thought this was just a slightly watered down Lucha Libre match. I just think Dom doesn't quite have that in-ring skill ability, but it was fun. I really enjoyed it. And it was short, didn't overstay its welcome. I think it was a little less than 10 minutes. And
It was 4 minutes and 55 seconds, buddy.
Whoa.
Wow.
Yeah.
There you
Perfect.
I could have gone two more, maybe.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, right person won in the right way. It was a nice little spotlight for Octagon Jr. I thought he was a highlight for me. Yes. Definitely not a lucha match. Dominic is not a lucha wrestler. He is a WWE wrestler through and through, and in a good way. I mean, he's actually kind of turning with the crowd. You know, he used to get natural heat, and now they're definitely more on his side. So it'll be interesting to see what they do with him if they decide to, you know, really lean into it, maybe make him a baby face somehow, which I don't know how that works because everything about him screams a shit heel. But it's just one of those perfect matches that you just slide into the show. Wasn't offensive, didn't overstay its welcome by any means. To Jesse's point, you could have added a couple minutes to it, but really enjoyed it.
Yeah. All right, well, then let's go to the women's IC title match with Lyra Valkyria defending against Becky Lynch. I thought Becky Lynch would win the IC title at Backlash. You know, we talked about that going in. I figured that she'd get it, and they have Lyra chase her for a while. Since Lyra retained, I thought it was nearly 100% Becky would win. The only way I could see Becky not winning here is if they brought back Bayley. She played into the finish a little bit, and they started a Bayley-Becky feud. I think Bayley might appear very quickly here, and we might see her soon, and maybe she gets involved in this feud. I don't know. We'll see. Seems like Bayley needs to get back involved in the mix, and this would be where you would insert her. But, you know, for this to have a winner, I think it had to be Becky. I've really enjoyed what the two of them have done with their feud. I think, Becky has got the best out of Lyra here. She's establishing her as kind of a next level star coming up to be working and getting a win over Becky, and eventually she'll get another win over her. But I think you had to pivot. You know, if you want to see this feud go on longer, you got to put the title on Becky, because otherwise, where do you go? You can't have Lyra beat her twice and continue it. So Made all the sense in the world for Becky to get the title back, or get the title for the first time here. And now Lyra's going to chase her. You know, they had a solid match. I mean, in ring work wise, this was probably the best match on the show. Do you guys concur? Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Easily.
So thoughts on the match itself before we get to the aftermath? I'll throw to you first, Justin.
Match of the night. I dug it. And this is probably just me personally having a hard time buying Becky as a heel for some reason. I don't know if just because, you know, she was the hottest baby face in the women's division, if not all of wrestling for so long. And just her coming back and all of a sudden going right to heel is just weird to me. Just a little too sudden, perhaps. But liked everything about this. The ending, I don't know. It was some fine line of effective and too much. You know, it's just like I got what they were doing with, you know, Becky making her raise her hand a bunch of times and then putting the title, you know, around her waist. But that's also a little bit of like dumb baby face. Like there was two dumb baby face moments on this card. The other one being Andrade and Penta climbing the ladder and like, oh no, you get the belt. That's all right. And then Penta like, oh, okay, I guess I'll just get the money in the bank. And then Andrade punches him. And this is like, you know, Lyra, the stipulation is, well, you just had to raise her arm. And you did that, you know, and then Becky, you know, keeps prodding her like a heel. And she's like, And I get it. It's professional wrestling. It was just one of those moments like, what are we doing here? Like,
just walk away. You don't have to. You've already done it. Why would
exactly.
you keep doing it?
Yeah. So that was just a little bit of a sting, dumb baby face moment for me. But like I said, pro wrestling, I get it.
Yeah.
Great chemistry between these two. Yeah, we got a little F1 race outside my apartment complex, apparently, since there is not one here on Sunday morning for people to watch. No, I thought, chemistry, tremendous. Great submissions from both. The reversal of a Frankensteiner to a powerbomb, I thought that was great. The manhandle slam from the middle rope from Becky was great. Awesome as well. The only drawback I have on this match was Lyra hitting the Nightwing on the outside, and they both waited till as soon as they heard nine, they both just jumped up like nothing happened and rolled in the ring together. Yeah. That's such a pro wrestling. Ugh,
that's the Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, I started to think they might be doing a double count out. I don't like that on a pay-per-view show, but they hadn't moved at all. And then all of a sudden they just both jump up at nine. I don't like that either. I agree. The right finish, you know, Becky used the tights to win, to cheat. They do the hand raising. I thought in the hand raising, you were going to have Becky attack her and then Bayley would run out to make the save. That's what I thought was going to happen. But instead, you know, Lyra snapped, hits her with the German and the Nightwing. So they will continue the feud. Carl is predicting, let's see, Bayley at Evolution 2 and then Lyra in a stipulation match at SummerSlam or further down the line to finish off the feud. Becky and MC Hammer's trousers was a look. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I liked Becky's look just because it was so different from what all the other ladies wear.
I actually am really liking Becky as a heel. I agree with you, Justin, that they went to it too soon. Like, I would have had them be tag champions for a little while before the split, not like a day later.
Yeah.
I would have dragged it out a little bit more, but you know, probably looking at the shows on the calendar, they knew they wanted to get to this match by Backlash and then a rematch. So they rushed that, I do think. But I think Becky as a heel, their promos, their back and forth have been very entertaining. I've enjoyed all of that. And so yeah, I think they got the character work down in this feud and it shall continue, which is the right call.
She's a great anti-hero.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I think she'd be a really good heel, but the crowd doesn't want to boo her at all, which, by the way, I think this is really getting tired, and I don't know if it's both promotions that do this, but you just insert, let's go, name here, that name sucks. That happened, I think, with Becky Lynch, happened with Cena, happened a couple other times. I was like, just think of something a little more creative, please.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Enough's enough.
Yeah. And then this was awesome chance, need to die.
They should have died with Cena Orton at Backlash.
Yeah. I even hate it when it comes on in the video game. The crowd just starts doing this is awesome in WWE 2K. I'm screaming at my TV, shut up! Shut up! No, I just started this match. It's not awesome. Give me some
Justin,
time here.
Would you tune that out on WWE 2K25? Would you totally tune out the commentary there as well?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. That's my mutant power, buddy.
Yeah, yeah. All right, men's Money in the Bank to finish this off here. Yeah, I mean, this was one of the least impressive Money in the Bank men's rosters ever, I think. And, you know, like I said at the show opening, going in, it seemed very obvious that Seth should win. You know, maybe you could make an argument for, like, an LA Knight, I guess. But, you know, I just feel like LA Knight peaked 2 years ago. What's the point?
Mm-hmm.
You know, they teased it towards the end of the match that he might get the win. Solo, you know, just he was a prop for a turn, which we'll talk about here in a second. But I just couldn't see Solo Sikoa winning. He's just firmly a mid-carder. And then, like, yeah, Penta, he ain't going to be in the world title situation ever in this company, I don't think. Andrade, as Jesse has well talked about on Unplugged many times, including playing the audio, Jesse, twice on the recent Unplugged of when Andrade walked out, I think at Money in the Bank last year.
Yes.
He got no reaction. He got zero reaction last night, too. I mean, no, this crowd does not care at all about Andrade. There is no way he was going to win. El Grande Americano. Okay, I saw people getting creative with this, saying, like, he might win, and then he might challenge for the AAA championship with it. You know, Okay, that could have made some sense. But in the end, Seth Rollins needed to win this match. He is in the most pushed faction in the company. I said this all behind the paywall, so I'll just repeat myself for all of our non-patrons here. If you think about all of these strong heel factions in wrestling history, they damn near always involve having the world title around that faction's leader's waist. NWO, the Horsemen, Evolution, the Corporation, Bloodline, the Hart Foundation. You know, like, if you're going to be a pushed heel faction, you almost have to have the world title. Because if you don't, you always look second tier. Like, oh, you're trying to make these guys look tough, but there's this transcendent babyface that has the title at the top of the roster. So there's second tier to him. You know, so not only does Seth need to win Money in the Bank, he needs to cash in quickly. Like, I would put the title on him Monday night. I didn't think that they would do it on this show because they have been pushing for the Jay Gunther match. But I did think that the tag had to main event, because on Money in the Bank, they've done it many times, including last year, where there was a cash in later in the show. So you can't main event with the men's Money in the Bank match, because you're going to have both world champions out there in the main event in a tag match, and you want to have the threat that there could be a cash in. So I always thought that this would be semi-main, as it was. I didn't think there would be the cash in last night. I do think they should do it Monday night, and I would put the title on Seth then and there. I would be interested in how they would do it. Now, personally, I would have him join that match kind of like he did the other time he cashed in at Mania 31 and make it a triple threat at the very end after both Jay and Gunther are both beat down, because then that way you don't have to have Gunther take a loss. I don't think Gunther should lose again to Jey Uso. So,
amen.
If they have Jay beat Gunther and then the cash in, I would not be a fan of that. I think both guys get in this grueling match. Seth comes out at the end, cashes in, pins Jey Uso, world champion. We're off to the races for the summer. He needs to be world champion. So I'm glad that they didn't overthink this and they didn't go another direction, because it was so obvious. Sometimes obvious is the right decision, Jesse. And that's what they did here.
Yeah, absolutely. People can chase Seth Rollins. There's a lot of baby faces on that side that have built in beef with him. Pat McAfee, I wanted to choke him, screaming, "That's the ladder that the Creed brothers hid under the ring earlier in the night with the fireball ladder that they," which I think it was like an in-between segment that they had talked about. Another thing I didn't like about Money in the Bank as a whole was the Cash App logo on the briefcase.
Yeah, that's bad.
Absolutely terrible. But yes, I think, yeah, Seth was the obvious winner. And those last 10 minutes, you didn't need all of that. It took complete attention away from all of the workers in the ring, and it just moved it towards a faction on faction showdown. So with the two heel groups. And what was your favorite Jeff Cobb moment in the WWE after losing to Jimmy Uso the night before? Just to get kind of sidetracked there. So bye-bye, Jeff Cobb or JC Mateo. Yeah. No, this match is paid by numbers. Right winner. And now let's just see who's going to hunt Seth down here in the next, we'll say, 2 to 9 months. I think Seth could hold us for a while.
Are you talking about the title or the briefcase?
The title.
Okay, good.
Yes. I think he cashes in on Monday night as well.
Yeah, yeah. I will say before I throw it to you, Justin, I got a little scared, you know, when the interference started with Braun and Bronson coming out there, that, oh no, Punk's going to come out and he's going to cost Seth the match and someone else is. I got a little scared there because I think that would have been a mistake. Turns out, you know, Punk wasn't on the show at all. But yeah, I mean, that ending sequence where Braun and Bronson come out and then Jacob Fatu and Cobb come out, that went on forever, and everybody else was just laying there like they were all deceased around ringside. Like, what? It was like 6 or 7 minutes, I feel it, like maybe longer, where nobody moved at all. I did not care for the finish. I mean, I cared that Seth won, but I didn't care for the way it all played out. You got Fatu turning on Solo Sikoa as part of this match, despite, you know, Jacob Fatu not even being in the match. Justin, your thoughts?
Shout out Bron Breakker's spear onto Americano Grande on his way in. That was fucking incredible. Real quick, I want to go back and touch on you guys talking about the cash-in should happen on Monday. Irregardless of how we feel about him, Jey Uso is freaking beloved. He is freaking over. I think the title is doing a lot for him. My kid freaking loves him. You know, he is over. And I think a lot of people would make the argument of, you know, give him a run, like really solidify him as a top level talent. And the counter argument is, this is exactly how you get heat on a heel, by them cashing in on the most over talent that is trying to get over. That works for both guys. It'll put more heat on Seth, and it'll make Jay look like even more of a baby face, you know, depending on how they execute it. So yeah, they've got to do it as soon as possible. Switching gears, it's super funny. We were 49 minutes into this podcast before we brought up one of the hottest acts in the company turning face on this show. And that is exactly why I fucking hated it in the moment. It's like, why are you doing this here when there's all this other stuff going on? Jacob should have gotten, you know, the brightest of spotlights on the babyface turn. And now here it is. It's just an afterthought on this show when it should have been the talking point for weeks that Jacob Fatu finally turned on Solo Sikoa. Mm-hmm. And it was lost. And in that, I just, to our point of this match being absolutely overbooked to the gills, I would have saved that to have its own moment on a Raw, or, you know, have that be a highlight of a PLE.
Mm-hmm. Quickly, I actually thought when Solo was climbing the ladder that Roman's music might hit.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
I also, you know, the other thing I hated about the turn was Solo kind of playing it as a comedy bit. Like, he kept trying to reach for the briefcase. Oh, why is my leg stuck? I can't move it. It's just, really didn't like anything about that execution.
I think Roman is prepping for like a Street Fighter movie role or something right now.
Oh.
I think that's where he's at. But yeah, I mean, that would have made some sense. To your point, Justin, about the title and Jay, and yeah, my kids love Jay too. They do the stuff with their arms every time he's on TV.
That's fair.
I think Seth needs the title more than him. You know, he will still be massively over without the title. I 100% agree with what you said. That's a way to really put heat on Seth by having him take it in a cheap way, you know, from Jay, and Jay chase after him eventually. I think that's 100% the way to go. To all the overbooking in this, there's also some spots in the match where like the timing was really bad. Yeah. You guys remember that spot where they had, I think it was supposed to be that Gable Americano was going to be like slingshotted on the outside up onto the ladder. Bad. And then he was going to like run up the ladder, and Penta was at the top of the ladder in the ring. Penta was standing there with his hand on the briefcase for several seconds, just staring, like waiting for Gable to get there. That was real bad. It was like, and what are you waiting for, dude? Grab the briefcase. And he's just standing there with his thumb up his ass, just waiting.
And everyone waiting, doing and the absolute best that they could to get Chad Gable onto that ladder. You could see the guys like down, just kind of like gliding him into the next ladder. Like Seth was like, I'm going to tip this ladder a couple feet. I go, this is bad. But the Penta point, wow, he's just like kind of stuck in midair, like frozen. You mentioned like a Tekken character or Sub-Zero in Mortal Kombat, just frozen.
He literally was standing there holding and just staring forever. It was very awkward. Yeah, it was not a great Money in the Bank match, but right winner. Definitely overbooked. I agree so much with what you said about Jacob Fatu and that kind of being lost, the turn during the middle of all this hoopla going on in the match. Not great. I wouldn't have done it that way. I guess, you know, ultimately the big story with Seth getting the briefcase, though, that is the proper way to go about this. So, that's everything on the show. I don't think, they announced Mania 42 for Vegas officially.
Oh, yeah. Fuck.
Yeah, so that's happening. April 18th and 19th, I believe.
Is that the same date that the New Orleans WrestleMania was going to be?
No, or did they moved it back
a week before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Money talks.
But as Hunter said in the post show, New Orleans won out too, because we were able to expand our deal with them, and they're going to get more events out of this deal now. Whatever.
Like Minneapolis.
Anything else WWE we wanted to hit on? We could mention a couple of AEW things here in just a second, just because we haven't been on the air recently. Before we do, let me just put up the patrons' names because a lot of them are in the chat here. I wanted to shout out our patrons as we always do. And if you're still with us here on YouTube or the podcast feed, let me just shill for a moment here. I did put up a Money in the Bank deal for our Patreon. So if you want bonus content from Top Rope Nation, I was talking about all the bonus shows we did this week, Jesse and myself. We got TRN Classics coming for Patreon next week. We're going to be reviewing the May 1989 WWF Saturday Night's main event that featured Boss Man and Hogan in a cage match. That was in Des Moines, Iowa, by the way, Justin and I's home state. We will be reviewing that. That will be for our patrons as well. We just did Backlash 2000 a few weeks ago on the Patreon side. If you want to get 50% off our Patreon, the deal expires late tonight at midnight on Sunday night. If you sign up, link is in the description here. Put in the code MITB, Money in the Bank. You get 50% off your first month. So you can get full access for $2.50, and that will take you all the way through Independence Day into early July. You get full access to the 190-plus bonus shows we've done, everything that's going to be released up until that point. And we're pretty confident if you try it out, you'll probably hang around. Most of our signups do. It's a lot of fun being on the Patreon page. And by the way, that discount applies to every tier. You know, you want to join the $10 tier, you can get 50% off there as well. The $20 tier, there's different benefits for all of those tiers. You know, so check all of that out and get some bonus content and support the show in the process. Support the show for free too by liking this video right now. We would appreciate that, and also subscribing to the channel while you are here. All of that stuff helps. If you're on the podcast feed, subscribe, 5 stars, written reviews on Apple really help us out a lot in the algorithm. So we would be appreciative of any of those actions that you could take.
We love our patrons, some of the finest people on earth. And Carl, to your last point, I love Chad Gable's in-ring work, so you get zero arguments from me on that comment.
They did pop me for just a split second during the Money in the Bank match when I wanted to believe he was going to get it.
Yeah. Hey, you know what we also had this week? Mariah May debuting on NXT. The former AEW Women's Champion is now in NXT. You know, everyone was certainly talking when she debuted on Tuesday night. Anyone have any thoughts on this?
The glamour.
What are they going to call her? Why would you change her name? That's bad. May everywhere. I know they're going to do it. I mean, some people they've let keep their names. It's a great name. She's coming off one of the best feuds of the 21st century, one of the best women's matches of all time. Why change her name? I mean, she has the recognizability with that name. That makes no sense to me. I'm happy for her. I mean, she obviously wanted to be in WWE. That was her goal. You can find all the social media pictures she's posted over the years being at WrestleMania and stuff. So, you know, certainly AEW tried to keep her around and, you know, they tried to re-sign her, but she wanted to go there. So, you know, that's her prerogative. I'm happy she's there. I would never in a million years have put her on NXT. I think that's a swing and a miss. Sure, she's going to run NXT for a little while, but you can't keep her down there too long. So for me, it's like, what's the point? You know, they have had a lot of call-ups to our point earlier, you know, with Julia coming up to the main roster, with Roxanne, with Stephanie Vaquer. But, you know, according to reporting, they basically cleared the deck in NXT and sent all them up so that Mariah May could run the show. And I think that's backwards. I don't think any of them had to come up right now. I think they could have waited since Mariah is like the established act right now in wrestling. She's the one coming in with all the hype. You could have brought one of the three up, maybe. But like, to me, you send Mariah May to the main roster right away, or you debut her at Evolution, and then you bring up those other gals like later on, you know, this year. I just think it's a backwards way of doing things. I'm sure she won't be at an NXT for very long. If she's in an NXT a year from now, Hunter should be fired, because that would be just total malpractice. So she'll get there eventually. It's kind of baffling to me that you would put Mariah May wrestling in a warehouse coming off of all of the awesome stuff that she has done in the last year. Don't get that at all.
Jesse, you son of a bitch. I'm pretty sure this was in our text thread, but you said Mariah March, and I believed you. I thought that was her new NXT name.
Sure did.
Probably going to be like Mariah Glamour or something like that.
Yep. It's going to be dumb, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. I don't know. The NXT thing is just so dumb to me. There's no reason why anybody who has already made a name for themselves in professional wrestling can go in the ring, why you would throw them in NXT and not strike, especially Mariah May, why you would not strike while the iron is at its hottest, put her on the main roster is beyond me. Like in Ethan Page, I get he was a mid-carder in the other promotion. So yeah, put him in NXT, build his name. Ricky Saints, he's kind of a borderline one. I think he probably should have gone to the main roster. But NXT is for people who are learning how to wrestle. Like, I don't, you know, if you're a fan of it, that's fine. You know, I loved NXT when it started and that's what it was. That's just not my interest anymore. But it just, I think there is a stigma attached to it. And now you're getting that stank on Mariah May, in my opinion.
If Rey Fénix, Penta, Aleister Black, if they all can just go right up to the main roster, Andrade as well, did it straight from AEW to the WWE, why can't Mariah May?
And Jade Cargill.
I was actually just going to go there.
Yeah.
She is the only woman that I believe has bypassed NXT to go to the WWE main roster. So that might be the way of thinking, but it's wrong. It's completely wrong. Mariah has been in front of a 50,000 person crowd winning the world title in her home country. She just came off of the best women's match, arguably of all time, blowing off the greatest women's feud of all time. There is no way she should be featured, like you just said, in a warehouse in front of 125 people. That makes zero sense. And now she only likely has one or two decent women to work with down there. Jordynne Grace, who she could get called to the main roster any given time. And I really like Sol Ruka. I think she's going to be part of the future plans probably in about 2 years now, which is perfect because now the women's roster is bloated up top. I even said to you guys in the text thread, I feel like Ivy Nile, a handful of those women can go right back down to NXT. There's no use for them in the main roster right now.
You know, it made sense back in the black and gold days and when there wasn't another, you know, major promotion on national television, why you would put a Kevin Owens or a Sami Zayn into NXT to build their name with the fan base. That made sense. We're way beyond that now. There is no value in putting a superstar of Mariah May's caliber on a Tuesday in a warehouse, to your point. It's just,
it undermines her character that's where she's debuting. Yes, she'll get another debut on the main roster, but I think it lessens the impact of that because, you know, everyone that follows them on social media or their YouTube channel or whatever, they all know that she's debuted at NXT first. And it does have the stigma that's the developmental brand. I mean, that's what it is. So when you see someone sent there first, you think, you know, well, they're not as good as the main roster quite yet. And that's counterproductive, I think. One of our good friends is in the Facebook group. I don't know if he wants this out there publicly, but he posted in the Facebook group. He believes that this is intentionally done to make AEW look minor league. You know the comment I'm talking about, right? I'm not going to call out his name because maybe he doesn't want this out there in the podcast verse, but
it's a great take, though.
I think that's correct. I think there is something to that, you know, and also, I just wanted to say, I've seen people on social media here and there saying, oh, you know, people complain about her being NXT. More people watch NXT than AEW. No, they don't. No, they don't. NXT's like cable rating is fairly close to Dynamite's most weeks. Like they're in the same ballpark. Mm-hmm. But AEW is also on Max. And everybody I know watches it on Max now. I know you do, Justin. It's better picture quality.
Mm-hmm.
There's tens of thousands of people watching on Max that are not factored into that viewership number on cable. You know, NXT was able to prop up the ratings for a while because they were bringing down main roster people to get people to watch it. It's not watched by as many people as AEW. It's not. That's not true. So she is being seen by less people now being on NXT. And I do not get that. I don't know why you would do that, but you know, she's happy to be there. I mean, I've seen the social media posts, so good for her for that.
You know, yeah. Real quick. Sorry, Jesse. Ryan, you talking about it. Like, of course, you know, they use the surprise of Mariah May in NXT, but she'll get the call up surprise. And I couldn't help but think about Big Daddy, the Adam Sandler movie. when he accidentally ruins the birthday surprise, and the girl's like, oh, we ruined the good surprise on you. It's like, oh, we ruined the good surprise on NXT.
That's good. Yeah, that's exactly right.
Love that.
That's exactly right. You know, we'll probably get more into the AEW talk on our next flagship in a week from now or so. But, you know, we did get Okada Omega confirmed. We have said on this podcast since they teased that with the face off months ago with the All In poster behind them that was going to happen. Confirmed. It's happening. I think they're at about 17,000 tickets for Texas sold right now. I imagine those are going to keep ramping up now that we've got some matches, you know, official. So we will be with you on the build to All In. That's going to be pretty exciting over the next month. I think most of the hype for us in wrestling is going to be AEW over the next month because, I mean, WWE's got the Saudi show, Saturday night's main event, but we're not going to really be hitting the build to SummerSlam until after All In. So primarily, for me at least, the hype will be AEW over the next several weeks.
Yeah, I agree. I think Evolution might be a nice little surprise. It'll be really cool to, again, just to redo Evolution, it with a completely different women's roster, because I believe Toni Storm was on the first one. There were a handful of women that are gone. Now you can feature some others. And yeah, with Mariah May one last time, I mean, she even tried out with WWE UK. This has always been on her radar since she broke into the business.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Dante in the chat, thanks for the heads up about picture quality on Max. It is much better. It is. It's very noticeable for me, at least when I'm watching.
As long as you can find it.
I've heard it's bad.
Now, the way they organize on Max is not great. Not great, but yeah. You have to search Dynamite to find it. They have an archive like page, but it's usually not updated very quickly. Mm-hmm. All right, guys. This has been episode 386 of Top Rope Nation. Again, you can find us later midweek. We haven't decided on the day yet, but we will be doing that TRN Classics for our Patreon supporters. Those retro shows are a lot of fun. So sign up for the Patreon if you want to be involved there. Otherwise, we'll be hitting you with a new flagship next weekend. Join the Facebook group, chat with us every day, search Top Rope Nation Pro Wrestling Discussion. You can find the show on Blue Sky, Instagram. We're also on TikTok and Twitter as well. Boys, appreciate the time this morning. It's been fun.
Yes, had a blast. This was a lot more fun than the actual show was.
That's usually the case with the WWE events for us.
Yeah, fair statement. All right, guys, well, enjoy what is left of your weekend. Have a good week, and we will be talking to you again real soon. Take care.
When your company earns unlimited 2% cash back on all purchases with Capital One, that's serious business. So, Steven at SandCloud got a serious business card, the Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One.
We used our 2% cash back to help build our retail presence.
Savvy, Steven!
And we get big purchasing power, so our business can spend more and earn more.
The Spark Cash Plus card from Capital One. What's in your wallet?
Terms and conditions apply. Find out more at CapitalOne.com/SparkCashPlus.